Next case this morning is case number 56706, State of Nevada versus Jethro Lloyd. Mr. Lowe for the prosecutor, for the district attorney. Ms. Kilpatrick for Mr. Lloyd. Good morning to both of you. You ready to proceed, Ms. Lowe?
Pardon me. Robert J. Lowe, Deputy District Attorney, Elko County, for the State of Nevada. This is an interesting case because it involves basically the exclusionary rule and as developed by the U.S. Supreme Court and recent cases, Herring and Davis v. U.S. 131 Supreme Court 2419, a June 16, 2011 case from the U.S. Supreme Court that trim back the exclusionary rule and say that it should be applied only in cases of deliberate, knowing, or grossly reckless behavior by the police, as well as a divided body of case law from this court regarding automobile searches and the exigent circumstance component of automobile searches. And on one hand, you have the Barrios-Lamalley line of cases, and on the other hand, you have Fletcher and Hughes. And in Barrios-Lamalley and Harnish, you've got severe requirement of exigent circumstances of danger to the police and the public at large and danger of destruction of evidence. And on Fletcher and Hughes, it's unreasonable to make the police remain at the roadside at their rest and go get a warrant or wait for a warrant at the tow yard. So it's confusing to the police to have these two lines of cases, and tied to that, it's unfair to apply the exclusionary rule as Judge Romeo did in this case when the cases are so confusing, because it's mere negligence, and that's what the U.S. Supreme Court says we shouldn't apply the exclusionary rule to. It won't do any good for the police, because the police are going to misinterpret the law. It's going to happen on the occasional case. They're simply laymen at law, and to get it wrong every now and then is going to happen, and we shouldn't apply the exclusionary rule to this kind of case. What it results in is the criminal defendant, the guilty criminal defendant, and perhaps dangerous criminal defendant, being released on the streets and no appreciable deterrence. Again,
are you asking us to overrule Harnish?
No. No. I guess what I'm saying is to overrule Judge Romeo.
Because, right, I get that.
Because these cases make some sense, but Judge Romeo incorporated Harnish and Barrios-Lamalley factors in evaluating a roadside stop case. Harnish was a parked immobile car, and so was, Barrios-Lamalley. Lamalley was in a McDonald's, I believe, and his car was parked, and Fletcher and Hughes were stopped alongside the road. So these cases are reconcilable, but perhaps
for lawyers. Well, but here the car was in the parking lot, correct?
Big pardon?
The car was in the parking lot in this case. So it's kind of in between Harnish and Fletcher.
I'm not sure about that, Judge, and that's because Trooper Pickers saw the defendant's vehicle coming down I-80, and he saw him go through a red light, and he lit him up, and it just happened that he pulled into a parking lot at front of Dottie's Casino, I think by Starbucks in Elko. So it just happened that the defendant pulled into the parking lot. It's not a case like Harnish and Barrios-Lamalley where they'd already been parked. So Judge Romeo pulled into a roadside stop case, really, factors that involved cars that had been parked and stopped. And he also pulled in foreign authorities that the state was unfamiliar with, and it's unfair to do that without giving notice and telling the state, I'm going to use these factors and maybe you could address them. And cases from other states, unpublished cases in
But hasn't the confusion in our jurisprudence on vehicle stops required district court judges to look for factors and other jurisprudence from other jurisdictions to assess exigent circumstances? If this court were to revisit its jurisprudence on vehicle stops, as suggested, for example, by Justice Maupin in a dissent in Camacho, the judges in this state wouldn't be forced to look to other jurisdictions to define factors that assist or don't assist one in identifying exigent circumstances.
Don't have a problem with that, Judge, as long as the rules are known beforehand, as long as it's prospective. And in a case like this, the exclusionary rule shouldn't be effective. The evidence should still come into the trial, and it should be prospective. If we want to have all these factors that Judge Mayo used from Pena-Flores and whatever cases he used from other states, that's fine. But the party should know about it ahead of time. The police should know about it ahead of time. And we should know going in that this is going to be a prospective rule. We're going to use all these factors. And the rules of the game should be known to all parties before, you know.
Go ahead.
My concern is that by adding all these factors to what is now an exigent circumstance, and having that requirement in our jurisprudence, we have troopers and policemen on the streets pulling someone over at 3 o'clock in the morning and now going through a 12-point checklist to figure out whether they can search or not.
You know, it's a great question. And these troopers, you know, they're, like I say, they're laymen generally. I don't know too many, if any, that have gone to law school. And so we've got...
Well, they get pretty good training in post, but I still think that to expect anyone, including any of the three of us, to stand out there and go through the 12-point checklist, I'm not sure I could remember it. What was the probable cause, though, for this trooper to call the canine unit? I don't see anything in the record that provides a basis for him to call the canine unit out to look at this vehicle. He's going to ticket this individual for supposedly running a red light.
You know, I guess you don't need probable cause to run a dog around the car. The bottom line is there's no expectation of privacy in the air around the vehicle. It's not a search. You don't need any kind of probable cause to do it. That's the bottom line. Coming from the U.S. Supreme Court and this court as well, I believe, it's not a search. The definition of a search.
But he's holding this individual till the dog gets there.
Well, he's also going through the ticket process, running the license, that kind of thing. He's not really extending the detention appreciably. So it's not, the issue here is not really a seizure. The issue here is a search case, respectfully. So Judge Mayo relied improperly, we believe, on foreign factors, and without giving notice to the parties, he improperly brought in factors from Barrios, Lamelli, and Harnish into a roadside stop case. And the cops have been told by this court in its jurisprudence in Fletcher and Hughes, we distinguish Barrios, Lamelli, and Harnish because those were cars that were parked and not a roadside stop case. And this is what we have here is a roadside stop, just like in Fletcher and Hughes.
I'm having trouble distinguishing this case factually from Barrios Lamelli. Barrios Lamelli is sort of the same vintage as Harnish, and it's the case where the guy's inside at the Walmart McDonald's eating something, and he comes out, his car's in the Walmart parking lot, and the failure to obtain a warrant was deemed violative of his Fourth Amendment rights because there was no exigency attendant to that.
True.
How is this case different from that?
He'd already been parked. Mr. Lloyd was traveling down the highway when he was lit up. It's a roadside stop kind of case. If I forgot to reserve 5 minutes again.
You still have 5:33. You want to reserve the rest?
Unless there's a question, I...
Well, what I was going to ask is it your... I watched it. I watched the dash cam. And he was talking to Lloyd and talking to Lloyd, and then he calls for the dogs. And what bothered me is your answer to Justice Hardesty was in every case they can call for the canine unit, is your opinion, without any reason whatsoever on everybody who runs a red light in Nevada?
Well, I don't think it's going to happen, but there's not enough dogs to do that. But
based on the other cases pending up here, including the one to be argued, at least Trooper Picker thinks he can.
Well, you know, I'm not certain, but perhaps we'd have to ask him. But the bottom line is, it isn't a search. It's not a search. It's clear in the case law that to run a dog around the car, you're smelling the air around the car, and there's no expectation of privacy in the air around a car. It's just like if the police ran a drug dog around the outside of the motel door. You don't have an expectation of privacy in the air that's escaping from your motel room, and so consequently, it's not a search. I realize it's circular logic, but I didn't invent this test. The U.S. Supreme Court did. The definition or the test for a search is a violation of a reasonable expectation of privacy. I know you know this, but and there's no expectation of privacy in the air that escapes from your hotel room, your car, anything. So it's not a search to do it. And no, they don't need any justification whatsoever. And the circuits are clear. The U.S. Supreme Court's clear. And I know this court believes so, too.
You have 3 minutes and 42 seconds for rebuttal. For Mr. Lloyd.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Good morning. I am Alina Kilpatrick, Deputy Public Defender for Mr. Lloyd. First off, I'd like to address Mr. Hardesty's question and Justice Cherry's question regarding the probable cause for a drug dog. As I'm sure you're aware from watching the dash camera video, only 2 minutes into that stop is what it took for Pickers to call that dog. And Pickers admitted during the preliminary hearing that he asked dispatch to run a criminal records check. On cross-examination during the preliminary hearing, Pickers admitted that that's not something that's necessarily standard, that's not something he does in every case, and that is something that takes a longer amount of time than simply running someone's license and registration and making sure they're valid. So from the defense perspective, what happened was is Pickers was using the criminal records check to stall for the dog to get there. Now I'd like to go back and talk about...
I have a question on that point because it concerns all three of us on the dog search and routinely calling it. The findings of fact state that the stop up to and including the arrival of the drug dog and the sniff did not appreciably lengthen the purpose of the original stop, which was for the possible issuance of a traffic ticket for running a red light. That finding is binding on us unless it's clearly erroneous. And if that's the finding that's made, is this case an appropriate case for debating the issue of whether or not it's appropriate to detain a motorist who stopped while you wait for the drug dog to come when there's no reasonable suspicion? And we also have that finding from Judge Mamayo that there was nothing about this that suggested drugs. There wasn't even reasonable suspicion. Once the dog got there, fine, he's entitled to sniff around the air. But the question my colleagues are asking is whether or not that was a fair thing to do, to detain him. What I would need to hear from you is why that finding by the judge doesn't preclude us from getting to that issue.
First of all, I believe that was not addressed in the respondent's brief. I don't think we said that. So I have to, just in the spirit of, you know, fairness and equity, I mean, I'm going to say that right off the bat. Secondly, there is, of course, deference given to the trial court's finding of fact. I don't know, given the record, if, and the opinion, it was rather lengthy in this case, If the district court really considered the fact that Pickers ran that criminal records check as a stall tactic, I don't think that was really discussed in that opinion. So I guess to answer your question, given the fact that there is no fact there regarding whether or not that was a stall tactic, I think that gives this court some room to some wiggle room on that right, you know, on that rule of leeway. You know, you always have to give deference to the findings of fact from the court below. So I think in this particular case, it is appropriate because I don't think the court considered that as a stall tactic.
Did the defense argue that it was essentially a stall tactic, that the stop was prolonged as long as possible so that the dog could arrive?
It was set up at prelim, but not argued at that. But not the focus wasn't that. I'll say that the focus during the suppression hearing wasn't whether or not Pickers stalled. I mean, it was where we were going at prelim, but the exigency was really the focus of the motion to suppress in that hearing.
Did the JP watch the dash cam, and did Judge Mamayo watch the dash cam?
The Justice of the Peace watched part of it. Judge Mamayo did watch the dash cam. There was no actual live testimony presented at the suppression hearing. It was just a let's play the dash cam. The district judge commented on the fact that the running of the red light wasn't on the dash cam, and Trooper Pickers stated that when you activate the lights in an NHP patrol car, the recording's supposed to go back so that you can see the reason for the stop. That's the whole point. And let's not forget that Mr. Lloyd had California plates, California driver's license. I would like to address briefly the state's reliance upon Herring, because I believe that's misplaced. Herring and Leon. Leon discusses a probable cause that may not have existed in a warrant, but the police officer's reasonable reliance on that warrant. Herring talks about whether or not evidence should be suppressed that was obtained due to the fact that an arrest warrant wasn't cleared the way it should have been or misentered. And the difference between those cases and cases like this is that in Herring and in Leon, it wasn't the officer's judgment that was in question. The officer reasonably relied upon someone else's judgment. The officer reasonably relied upon the magistrate's judgment to issue the search warrant itself in Leon. The officer relied that, you know, the data entry folks with Herring or the other officers were appropriately keeping up with whether or not someone had an active warrant for arrest. There's a difference between something like that and a judgment call made on the side of the road. To say that the fruit of exigency can't be reviewed would be to say that we can't make that determination for simple probable cause. Probable cause, a totality sort of thing. You have to look at several factors. It's fluid. There's no bright line rule regarding probable cause. And those judgment calls are reviewed by this court and district courts. That's what we do. So
could I ask you this question, please? If the panel were to revisit our jurisprudence in the area of vehicle searches reject the notion that exigent circumstances is an element, was there probable cause in this case for obtaining the drugs from Mr. Lloyd's car?
You have to
suppose, for example, that the court concluded that vehicle searches in Nevada should be evaluated in accordance with New York versus Belton, and the suggestion in Justice Maupin's dissent in Camacho. Would the court nevertheless uphold Judge Mamayo's determination here because of an absence of probable cause?
I would say the court would not uphold Mameo's determination because you have to go back two steps. The fact that the dog alerted was because the fact that the dog got there because he didn't write the ticket and send him on his way.
So if the court were to revisit its jurisprudence, your argument, if I understand it correctly, would be that the court should remand the determination for the motion to suppress back to the district court to reassess the potential reason the dog got there in the first place.
Right, whether or not Pickers used the criminal records check as a stall tactic to get the dog there.
Right.
But I would not...
May I pause you also? Once, though, the dog arrived and alerted, had the dog been in Trooper Pickers' car, for example, and alerted immediately, you would agree that there was sufficient probable cause for Picker to get a search warrant at that point?
Yes. A proper dog alert would be probable cause to get a warrant, but that's what it
is. And you don't contest that this dog was adequately trained and certified and so forth?
Not for the purposes of this proceeding. That wasn't where we were going.
Did Judge Mameo consider credibility of the police officer's testimony, and did Lloyd testify?
Lloyd did not testify, Your Honor. I believe
that he didn't need to since it's on.
Yeah, it's all on tape. I believe that given the facts that were pointed out by Judge Mameo in his opinion, that he definitely took Pickers' credibility into consideration, especially since Mameo pointed out that there's nothing on the tape regarding this running of the red light and the fact that it only took 2 minutes for Pickers to call this dog with no indication of anything. No indication of criminal activity at all. I mean, Pickers couldn't even say, I smelled an odor of marijuana. Nothing. So, and I would not encourage this court to adopt a Belton rule. I mean, even though we have this flow of cases from Harnish to Berlioz-Lomeli and Fletcher and Hughes, what has been consistent is that we require the combination of probable cause and exigency. Then the question becomes, what is exigency? And I believe that the state's distinguishing Hughes and Fletcher from this case is also misplaced. An interesting fact about Berlioz-Lomeli is that case came about as a result of a confidential informant. The police were staking out the Walmart parking lot. The police were staking out the parking lot, saw the defendant come into the parking lot and park, and then go into the McDonald's, okay? So this wasn't one of those cases where, you know, the police, you know, just came across, you know, a car that, you know, was just sitting there or something like that. And there's a huge difference between Hughes and Fletcher in that Hughes, what those folks were pulled over, there were several occupants in the vehicle, because of shots fired at a casino. And in Fletcher, what happened was an inventory search as a result of a kidnapping charge. So we don't have a stop on the side of the road in any four of these cases, Harnish, Berlioz-Lomeli, Hughes, or Fletcher. It doesn't exist. And Hughes and Fletcher, the court said, there was exigency in the fact that we don't want the cops to just have to wait on the side of the road for a tow truck to come. And that presents an interesting question, because if the police officers aren't waiting on the side of the road for a tow truck to come, and later on they do get a warrant and they do search it, then they've got huge evidence problems. If the car's been sitting on the side of the road, you know, seemingly abandoned, I don't see, it would just be bad police work, I think, to do that anyway. So I think the practical implication of Hughes and Fletcher basically flips the holding in on itself. And in the New Jersey case, Penaflores, it actually says the opposite. Well, there's no exigent circumstances because a police officer can sit there, seal it, wait for the tow truck to come and take it to the station for a search warrant. And that's actually better logic, I think. The 12-point checklist or whatnot that Justice Hardesty, you referred to, I don't think there's a bright line checklist. This is something where a totality of the circumstances is what we need to look at. And, you know, if we come up with a checklist, later on there's going to be another case that may or may not present exigency that may or not be on there. I mean, the factors aren't necessarily exhaustive. It's very fact sensitive. And here there's no reason why, there was no reason to believe that the evidence was going to be destroyed. And it's the vehicle that was the subject of the alert, not the person. They could detain the vehicle for up to an hour to get a search warrant. And in an age where we have telephones, telephonic search warrants, and an ability to do that, there's no reason why that could not have happened. The state may argue, well, this happened on a Sunday. Well, it didn't happen on a Sunday at 4 a.m. There wasn't even an attempt to call a judge. And in 2011, cell phones are commonly used. NHP has dash cams with access to internet, radio, and everything. The reason why we have telephonic search warrants is to facilitate something just like this.
What would he say on the telephone? What possibly could he have said? I stopped a guy on the I-80 after he ran a red light, and he pulled over in a shopping center, and he got in the car, and I searched him, and he said, by the way, I've got a knife. I took the knife out. Where's the probable cause at all there to get a warrant?
I guess what I'm saying is if we assume for the sake of argument that the trooper did not stall by virtue of calling in for a records check, if we assume just for the sake of argument that that was okay, then he would, then the affidavit in support of a search warrant would say this is a dog, it hit. And then the magistrate would be able to determine probable cause for the search warrant based upon whether or not the dog was adequately trained and supervised, whether it had been monitored. And that way, an independent magistrate could determine what the dog's reliability as opposed to the cop. And that's important, too. There is an issue of dog reliability that needs to be reviewed independently by a magistrate. And that's the purpose of the warrant. Are there any more questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Just a little rebuttal on behalf of the state. 3 minutes and 41 seconds.
Thank you. In Fletcher, the court distinguished between Barrios Lomeli and Harnish and said that none of the heavy-duty exigent circumstances are required. None of the medical emergencies, imminent and the substantial threats to life, health, or property, the need to determine whether victims or suspects are on the premises, destruction of evidence, public safety, and officer safety are required. And there's no need to even try to get a warrant in Fletcher and Hughes. And so there's two distinct lines of cases that have come down from this court, and it's unfair to visit on the police a good faith error based on these two lines of cases where they do a roadside stop that's like Hughes and Fletcher and unlike Barrios Lomeli and Harnish, and to say, well, you should have got a warrant or tried to get a warrant. And it's a case where we have to remember the good faith rule. The exclusionary rule is only for, it's not a personal right. It's to deter future violations, and it's for deliberate and knowing and reckless violation of the Fourth Amendment, and not interpretations of the law like this, where there's two lines of cases that are parallel to each other, and here's an officer trying to interpret the law, trying to be vigorous in the stopping of crime, and that's what we want them to do. Any kind of other holding like Judge Mayo did will only serve to tell the police, don't do your job and don't ferret out crime. Don't do what you're supposed to do and sit on your hands.
Could you please, and I know I've asked this before, but it's still eluding me, how do you distinguish this case from Barrios Lomeli?
Well, I think Barrios
Lomeli. Unless we overrule Barrios Lomeli, I'm having trouble understanding, unless we do a Herring good faith type of exception to the exclusionary rule, I'm having trouble understanding why Barrios Lomeli doesn't control this case.
Barrios Lomeli was parked when the police came upon him, I believe, but I may have that wrong.
The car was parked, but it didn't, in terms of evaluating exigency, so too was Mr. Lloyd's car parked. It had been parked. He was detained. He was about to be arrested.
Okay, fair enough, but it's a roadside stop. It's he's going off I-80 and he goes through a red light without stopping, and he just happens to park in a parking stall rather than on the side of the road.
Why is it more exigent? I don't understand how you can tie that to exigency. Consistently with Barrios Lomeli.
The court's jurisprudence has distinguished between roadside stops in Fletcher and Hughes and cases where the car is immobile, unoccupied. And this is a car that's occupied, being driven, and basically a roadside stop. It's the functional equivalent of a roadside stop. Counsel said that...
There is a major difference, Mr. Lowe. In Fletcher, the defendant had been arrested for the search. Here, Mr. Lloyd isn't arrested until afterwards, so...
Fair enough, but in
Hughes...
There is
a significant distinction.
Fair enough, but...
But I think it underscores, and I appreciate your argument, but I think it underscores the point I thought you were making in your appeal here, which is that the jurisprudence in this area is confusing and warrants some clarification.
And either way, it falls. We would ask for a published opinion because we do need clarification. But that's right. In one case in Fletcher, he's arrested. Hughes, he's not arrested. It's an imminent arrest, I think. So, again, more confusion and more difficulties for the police. These aren't Talmudic scholars. These are cops trying to parse what they see is a roadside stop case, two roadside stop cases, and they see two cars that are already parked in a parking lot, and they see that they're trying to do the best they can. This is not a case where the exclusionary rule should apply, is I guess the message I would leave the court with. There's no knowing, intentional, gross.
Well, we're going to abandon our jurisprudence or just not worry about the confusion that it creates as to what the Fourth Amendment is under the Nevada Constitution. We're just going to say that the evidence is admissible because we're all so confused we can't figure it out, and so we shouldn't impose that on the cops either.
That's what the U.S. Supreme Court says, Judge. Counsel says Herring's not on point, but certainly Davis...
It seemed like it would be more productive to go back and fix why we have a difference in our Fourth Amendment jurisprudence, which is interesting in and of itself, given the fact that the provisions in the Nevada Constitution read almost exactly the same way as the provisions in the U.S. Constitution. I've never quite understood how we arrived at rules different in Nevada that impose exigent circumstances in vehicle stops. That's never really been explained in any of our published decisions.
Not clear to me either, but certainly if there's to overrule Harnish and Barrios Lomeli and go back to the U.S. Supreme Court holdings and track the U.S. Supreme Court, I think it would make it easier for the police to follow, and it would be a clear-cut rule rather than having two rules. I think it's always more muddier, if you will, when there's several lines of cases coming down from the U.S. Supreme Court, the Ninth Circuit, and this court to follow for the police. They just don't get it. And if we could have a simple rule, we're better off.
It might put DAs in a better position so they're not having to come up and say, well, to fix all this mess, just court rely on Herring and let it in anyway.
Herring and Davis v. U.S., which is that came down on June 16, 2011, which is exactly, Davis, it's even stronger although it repeats a lot of Herring, it says the cops shouldn't be penalized for trying to do their job and it's only for these knowing, grossly intentional or grossly reckless violations that you should use the exclusionary rule, and that didn't happen here. It's just a police officer trying to conscientiously trying to do his job. And we would ask that the court, if you're going to think about this case in particular, send it back with instructions regarding the exclusionary rule, because that should be clarified too in Nevada, I think, that the exclusionary rule is only for these gross violations to deter future conduct. The cops aren't going to get it. All they're going to see is...
Please finish up.
Yes, all they're going to see is a cop was trying to do his job and there was a muddied...
We have another question for you.
Mr. Cherry, I don't have a question about the merits of the case. It's more of a case management question. Mr. Lowe, are you and Ms. Kilpatrick intending to argue the Beckman case tomorrow?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Since you came down here from Alco, I wondered if it was worthwhile... Given the fact that the argument on the law is essentially the same, perhaps counsel could confer about whether argument in Beckman is necessary. I mean, if you want to stay over, there's a cost to the government, but whatever. But I just wonder if it's unnecessary to inconvenience counsel and let you go home, since the focus of the case on the law, at least, is the same in the two cases. If you want to confer, I mean, if you want to still argue the cases, let us know. But I just propose
fine with me either way.
The presiding justice that maybe you might want to confer on that subject, not have to wait an extra day.
Thank you. You always make your best arguments on the way home, hitting the steering wheel, as you remember. And I was hoping to not have that, and try again with another.
Hello, this is your chance for a clean getaway.
Your Honors, if I may, Lloyd was my case at prelim, so I'm a lot more familiar with it than Mr. Beckman. Mr. Beckman was not, and I, given the fact that the arguments that I've made have said that the exigency requirement is fact sensitive, I'm not intimately familiar with the details of Beckman as of this morning, to the point where I feel confident that I could say that the issues are exactly the same. I mean, I think they may be, but I was planning tonight to rather nerdily bury my nose in the appendix, if that would be permissible, and if that's...
It's scheduled. I just wanted to give you an opportunity.
I would welcome you back tomorrow.
And it's always a treat to actually come out here to Carson, where we have access to different restaurants and, you know, things like stores.
Well, thank you both for your argument, and this matter will stand submitted. We'll be recessed 11:30.